Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and now accomplished episodic television director, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong.
Wow.
Look at that.
You're changing up the intro every week. It's improving and wow. Very exciting. Very exciting.
Constantly evolving.
Exactly.
And remember, everyone, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. There you go.
Yes.
Got
Come
all
on
info.
In. Come
the water's,
on.
Yeah. The water's warm. Come on in. Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Playing around with my microphone a little.
Is this your old mic or new mic?
This is my old mic. It's the same old mic.
Okay, gotcha.
I've been told that I need to get a new mic.
Is a dent or something?
I've been told that it's the quality of my mic. Remember when we started this podcast?
And yes.
Like, you have to get this particular microphone.
You did not listen to me. In true Tom Paris form. You went with your other thing. You're like, whatever.
I went for like the middle of the road, and now I'm hearing from our very accomplished editorial team that my sound is not up to standard, and they want it better. They want to keep improving, just like your intro.
I'm so excited. So maybe you will now have a microphone that I recommended to you to get in the beginning then.
Yes, I'm going go all out.
Okay, excellent. Anyway. All right. So this week's episode.
Yes.
Is Counterpoint.
Okay.
Counterpoint. So I'm excited to, this is not bringing up any memories for me. So I'm excited to go watch this episode of Counterpoint.
Yeah.
So Robbie and I will be right back with our recap, discussion, and review of Counterpoint. Hey everyone, Robbie and I are back from watching Counterpoint.
Yes, we are.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Yes, ooh. That was something different.
Yes, it was.
It was a very different kind of episode.
Yeah, it was a chess game.
Yes,
match, pretty much.
Yes,
and very different from what we've seen so far, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially the structure of the episode, how it started and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just jump into our poetry synopsis of Counterpoint.
Yes, let's get to the poetry because that's really what I look forward to every week.
Same here. Here we go.
Okay.
My haiku for Counterpoint. One more inspection. Voyager hides Brenari. Can't outwit Janeway.
Ooh. You brought it home there at the end.
Yeah,
nice.
I did.
Nice.
Okay. Let me hear this fabulous limerick came up with.
Here we go with our limerick poetry synopsis. Here we go for Counterpoint. Smuggling refugees through Devoran space. Kashyyyk is looking to Janeway for an embrace. A game of wits is played. It's quite a masquerade. If only Kashyyyk knew. Janeway always wins the race.
Yeah.
Okay.
You kind of brought it around too.
Did you notice?
Did you notice when he introduces himself, he doesn't say Kashyyyk. Everyone else in the whole ship says Kashyyyk, including the Brenari aliens say Kashyyyk. But when he introduces himself to Janeway, when he doesn't introduce, he says, "Don't call me Inspector. Call me." He says Kashyyyk. Is what he says. Yes.
Oh, that's right.
He says Kashyyyk. And then everyone else just starts calling him Kashyyyk. So it's, you know, tomato, tomato, I guess.
Well, do you remember they used to put a pronunciation guide?
Pronunciation guide, yes.
In the front of our script. And so names like this, there would always be a pronunciation guide.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody referred to that. In fact, I admit I did not always refer to it.
So it might have been a case of the guest star read the pronunciation guide, but season five, the actors, the Voyager actors were like, "Nah, we'll
just
pronounce it."
Everybody just starts. Yeah. You just start repeating whatever somebody else, you know, started.
It takes on a life of its own, basically. Yeah. So, okay. All right. You want to give us the guest star role rolled out or the roll down?
Let's talk about our actors first. Okay. Really big guest cast on this one, larger than most. The first one I will say is Mark Haralick, who plays Kashyyyk or Gashyyyk. Mark Haralick is originally from Texas.
Okay.
And as I like to do, talk about their very first job, Mark Haralick made his television debut in a TV movie called Unspeakable Acts with Bebe Neuwirth and Gregory Sierra.
What year was that?
1990, which is kind of late considering, you know, he's a very experienced actor, but he was a theater guy. I know Mark Haralick did a ton of theater.
Okay.
Kier, who was
the head of the Bernari.
Exactly. The Bernari guy, the guy that Jane was always talking to. That actor's named Randy Oglesby.
Mr. Oglesby,
very first TV job was actually a theater piece adapted. I don't know if it was for PBS. That's the guess I'm making.
It was probably
for PBS or something like that. It was a version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh.
In 1981.
Wow.
He did A Christmas Carol on television. We also have Prax, played by J. Patrick McCormick.
Yes.
His very first TV and film job was in 1992, a movie called Folks. Folks with Tom Selleck was the star.
Wow.
Yes.
82. Well, can I just say one thing about J. Patrick McCormick? Prax, when you first see him on the view screen, and later we see him on Voyager for the inspection. He really reminded me, or I thought it was the actor Glenn Morshower.
Oh, yeah. It looks so much like Glenn.
It's crazy.
I thought the same thing.
I was like,
I've worked
this
with Glenn a couple of times.
Of course. And Glenn was on TNG, on Voyager, on, do you remember the episode of Voyager he was on? Resistance. The one with Joel Grey.
Yeah.
He was one of the security guard guys. And then he was also on Enterprise. So he's done three guest star roles on Star Trek, but not this episode. And I swear he came on. I said, that's Glenn.
I know. It looked just like Glenn.
Yeah.
No.
It's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Another actor guest star on our show playing Vorik again, reprising his role of Vorik, is Alex Enberg.
Yes.
Alex Enberg, if we haven't covered it already, made his TV debut in the TV show Quincy, 1982, as a young child, I'm sure.
Oh.
Or a teenager, at least.
Yeah.
We also have Tarot.
Oh, yeah. Yes, Tarot.
Who has the nose breathing that I love.
I knew you would like that.
Randy Lowell is the actor. He was his first job was 1982, Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, my goodness.
Like episode two, one of the first episodes of that. Randy Lowell, yes.
And you know why I knew you would like his role or his character? Because he kind of could have been a cousin of Salamander Paris.
Right? He looked so much. I wrote that down in my notes. When you see him, it's kind of the similar face vibe as Threshold Paris.
Threshold Paris.
The Lizard Paris, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our last actor I want to mention is the little boy who talked with Neelix during the story. He had telepathy.
Yes.
And that character's name is Adar.
Okay.
And the little boy's name was Jake Saxon. And his first job ever was a TV movie called For the Future, The Irvine Fertility Scandal. Must be based on a real life thing. Mary Lou Henner was the star, but also Alicia Coppola was in his little Jake's very first job. Alicia Coppola was in the
Stoddy,
pilot.
The Betazoid. Yes. So, who you flirt with.
So we brought it all back around.
Is this sort of like Voyager. 6 degrees of Alicia Coppola? What are you doing?
I think so.
Wow.
Okay. That's all the actors that I have. We also have Michael Taylor wrote this episode.
Yeah.
Michael Taylor wrote a bunch of DS9 and Voyager scripts. And Uncle Les Landau directed.
We forgot to guess who this. We got to start remembering to do that again. But Uncle Les came back season 5 to direct this one. Yeah, and he did a great job. Okay, so I just want to bring up one thing concerning the writing.
Yes.
You know, for a while, I've had this in my head, this story. which I cannot remember if it was Brian. I can't remember which person from the writing department that I had this conversation with, but I thought it was possibly Brian, but maybe not. But whoever I had the conversation with, I was asking them about how people pitch. You know, how do people come right. in to the writers, to a producer and say, here's my pitch for Voyager. And the example that they gave was the writer that pitched for Counterpoint.
Really?
Yes, because they said that the pitch can be a very long, detailed pitch, or it could be as simple as one sentence.
Yeah.
And this was the example that was given to me by whoever I had this conversation with. And I've held this memory in my head for all these years. And the pitch was, Voyager harbors Jews from the Nazis, is what it is, was the pitch. Yeah. So basically it was like, let's save the lives of these people that are being persecuted. And mm-hmm. the pitch was Voyager hides Jews from the Nazis. And that, it was very simple.
I heard sentence. The same thing about this, that it was yeah. Anne Frank on Voyager.
Yeah, Anne Frank on Voyager. Yeah. So one very quick sentence and boom, that was purchased. They were like, yep, we'll buy that. So there you go. I don't know if Michael Taylor actually pitched the story, if it was pitched by somebody else, and then Taylor was given the assignment to actually write the teleplay. I don't know, but still, I do know I remember this conversation, and you have a little bit of a memory of that too. Then, so
yeah, I do remember this episode was originally something very different. Mm-hmm. I remember now, you know, now that we've watched it, so many memories come flooding back. I remember that originally this was going to be Anne Frank on Voyager mm-hmm. and that Janeway was supposed to fall in love originally. I think she was supposed to fall in love with like one of the refugees, like Anne Frank's dad or something.
Oh,
like it was a whole thing.
So Keir and her were supposed to be in
that something. Love. Yes.
Yeah.
Originally it was supposed to be that.
Yeah.
And then they were like, wait a minute, what if she falls in love with the bad guy?
With
and
the
then
bad guy.
So they sort of took the pitch.
Yeah.
And changed it out. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we start this whole episode and it's on the bridge. And clearly we know right off the bat, this is old hat. We have gone through this before. Everyone is ready for this inspection by the Devor. And by the way, all I could think of when I watch this episode and you hear that they're called the Devor is one of my college buddies who also knows Mitch Melkinson, so in the same fraternity. His last name is
Mitch DeVore. Melkinson is my attorney.
Yes,
my entertainment lawyer.
My ex fraternity,
your
my
old fraternity brother.
Exactly. One of our Mitch other Melkinson. Fraternity brothers. His name was Mark DeVore. DeVore.
Oh, that's funny.
So every time I hear this, the DeVore coming, I think about Mark DeVore from Boston, who plays hockey. And that's clearly not the same, but I cannot get that out of my head. So the classical music starts playing. And again, another really different take on it.
I was going to say, yeah, overall, I thought it was really, it felt very different because a lot of times where you expect to hear the score for Voyager, instead, there was this classical music, which became a theme and a story point.
Yeah.
But yet it made the episode feel very, very different.
Very much so. And you know, you remember when Kashyyyk calls Janeway to mm-hmm. her ready room, he's got the music playing and he tells her that he's got it on because maybe this will help the crew relax. And again, another theme about maybe this will help you relax, that we see that, we hear that and see that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then that made me think about, there was a 7-Eleven in Los Angeles that I used to go to, and they would be playing classical music on speakers
really?
Right at the doorway. And I asked the cashier, I'm like, why do you guys play classical music?
They
in
said,
a
well, 7-Eleven,
because, yeah, in a 7-Eleven. They said, because this 7-Eleven has been robbed so many times that the owner decided to pump out classical music because it's supposed to calm people down and keep them from going aggro and crazy and ballistic and trying to and maybe deter a robbery. So that's
wow.
Yeah. So that
interesting.
Is interesting. Yeah, that's a story that popped in my head.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Kashyyyk is trying to calm everybody down by playing
really
this classical music from our database, which he's never heard before.
Right.
You know, so he's just learning about all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we see that this has been happening a bunch. We've been boarded. We're going through this part of space mm-hmm. where they're coming to check they're looking for telepaths.
Correct.
It is the number one illegal thing in their part of space to have telepaths on on board. But we don't find this out quite yet.
No, no, it's not revealed right off the bat. Definitely not.
What is revealed is they're in the Kashyyyk is in Janeway's ready room behind her desk.
Yeah.
And he's drinking coffee and he talks about coffee. And he's like, this is delicious. And he goes, Pax or whatever his name is, Prax doesn't really like it.
He won't even try it.
He won't even try it. But I like this stuff.
Yeah, it's very bold on the part of Kashyyyk to sit in her chair, drinking her coffee. And that was
I also noticed on the bridge and in the ready room and throughout, the lighting was very different in this episode than we normally have. We were in gray mode later on, which I know is a particular look, but generally I thought the rooms, every room looked very kind of dark and dangerous and mysterious in a way that we don't.
Wow.
Usually we're either at red alert.
Huh.
And there's that look, or it's a normal look, or it's a low power mode. But this felt like danger mode. I don't know. This felt like a whole different lighting look that that Marvin Rush did.
Okay. All right. Good catch.
Throughout. Yeah.
We see an exterior of the Voyager. The
extra flyby with the divorce ships that look so cool.
They're massive. They're very
massive, and they look like stingrays or something.
Yeah.
Like some kind of, you know, oceanic kind of fish or something. And I thought they were super
really
cool.
Different from every other alien vessel that we've seen up to this point. So I was like, wow, look at the hull plating on that ship. Look at the, it was pretty cool looking. Definitely. Agreed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was very cool. So we see the flyby and
now it's a montage. We have a montage between the corridor, the Jeffries tube, the transporter room, sick bay, engineering, mess hall, cargo bay of the inspection. All the while,
you know what I liked about this montage, all to the classical music. Yeah. What I liked about the montage is I started seeing drawers and panels and places that I never knew we had panels.
Yes.
I was like, whoa, there's something there.
There's a drawer in the middle of that corridor. We didn't know that.
I never knew that. That's cool. Why don't we use that? There was some cool. And they were really rough with the stuff, by the way.
They were quite rude.
They go into like the sick bay and he's got some slides and the doctor's like, please be careful with that. It's, very valuable information. And he just drops it, crashes it.
Doesn't care.
They do go to engineering and B'Elanna, they say, hey, you've used, why'd you reroute all this energy to the transporter room? And she's like, oh, it was just a routine diagnostic. No big deal.
Yeah.
And so he
gives her a tip on what she should be doing. And she rolls her eyes basically, thanks a lot for giving me that info.
They check out Seven, in the cargo bay or wherever she's at.
Yep.
They're like, what's up with this reading? And she goes, oh, that's my interlink node for communicating with the Borg. And he goes, but you're not a telepath, right?
Right.
Nope.
Is that the first point where we notice that that's what they're looking for?
That may be the first
time. That might be the first
time.
It's Prax, right? Prax has that conversation with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we go back to the ready room and Kashyyyk is talking to her.
Yeah.
And he talks about these contradictions with humans, like that you have this beautiful music, but then you've got this history of horrific war as well. Like you're just very... we can't pin you down. And he also brings up the crew manifest in the scene.
Yeah.
And he says,
before you go in the crew manifest, I wrote down the actual line that he says. He says, your culture has many contradictions, violence and beauty, science and faith, all somehow mingled harmoniously, like the counterpoint of this music, Mahler, Symphony Number 1. So this is a great, little intro to the title of the episode here with the music. And that's when he examines the Voyager. Well, he has examined the Voyager crew manifest.
Yeah. He points out on the manifest, he says, you've got some Vulcans here and a Bolian and
Betazoids.
Betazoid. And why haven't we met them? Why haven't we seen, they don't seem to be around. And then Janeway gets very kind of emotional about, they died. And it's very sad. And
right. She says Vorik Tuvok and Jurat died in a shuttle crash. Suter died facing the Kazon, and you know, they mm-hmm. were valued members of this crew, and just because they are telepaths, it doesn't mean that they're bad people, the way that the D'Vor look at all telepaths.
I did notice in this scene, by the way, it's a long scene. Very long, because, you know, Prax ends up coming in and saying, hey, we didn't find any telepaths, but they diverted from their course that they said they were going to be on. And that's a illegal offense. We should impound this ship, and you know, there's penalties for that, and yeah. Kashyyyk's like, nah, we'll let this slide, we'll give her a break on this, she could use a friend. So he starts to plant this, like, oh, this
little seed of friendship
or something.
Yes.
Yeah,
you can,
but in
trust
this scene
me.
With Prax and Kashyyyk and Janeway and everything, the blocking was, I have to say, very complicated, a lot of movement, which yeah. means that you've got to be shooting these angles, you know, different angles for screen direction and just mm-hmm. all these. It seemed almost overcovered to me, I have to say. Like, oh. I was like, wait, where are they looking now? Okay. Where is he standing? I didn't know where people were.
Yeah.
Sometimes when the blocking gets too complicated, yeah. to me, I start getting a little disoriented in space. I'm like, yeah. wait, where are they now?
Have
they
moved? My disorientation happened when you see Harry in the transporter room. Like, he's standing at where the transporter chief is. The D'Vor come in and he walks around and they go to meet him, but he's not there where you would think Harry would be. Yeah. So it was like, wait, where did I go? And then the next scene, Harry's standing right next to them. So I was thinking, wait a minute, the transporter room is a very small room. It's not yeah. like Harry would have got lost yeah. on the way over there. You should have saw, you should have seen Harry in a certain shot that you didn't see. So
yes, there was a few times that happened where yeah. where I noticed, like, I think there's a scene later on in the briefing room when mm-hmm. Janeway comes in and Kashyyyk is there. And then it's not until she walks around one side of the table that you realize, oh, there's a couple of security guards yeah. in here. Yeah. Like, I didn't even see them.
Not until that other shot.
I think being disoriented like that and then all of a sudden seeing a character was in the room, I felt a little, I don't know, it felt a little confusing. And it seemed to be a pattern in this episode. I'll just point that out.
Yeah, yeah, but it also could have been intentional. Maybe that's what he wanted. Maybe Uncle Les wanted to have that sort of like,
maybe.
Wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, to keep you yeah. on your toes. So you yeah. never know. You never yeah. know. So now
we're on the bridge.
Yeah, we're on the bridge, but we kind of have a bit of a montage between bridge, cargo bay one, transporter room, and engineering mm-hmm. in order to bring back Tuvok, Vorik, and all the telepathic refugees, adults yes. and children, all the Brenari. And there's some issues. It's not the easiest beam back, because the pattern buffers they've been basically in suspension. They mm-hmm. haven't been beamed back. Their patterns are sort of just sitting there in cyberspace, just sitting there, just waiting to be beamed back. And finally, it works. Thank goodness yep. they're able to beam them back with the increase in power that B'Elanna gives, and Janeway yep. tells Harry what he needs to do to help get everyone
and
back.
And we've never done this before, right? Like, no. I don't remember this ever on the show.
No.
I don't even remember it mm-hmm. happening in Star Trek at any other time transporters. That someone, characters get beamed into suspension.
Yeah, not in our show. Not on our show. Maybe on another one, though.
Maybe on another one, but very yeah. unusual, technical sci-fi yeah. you know, idea to
very
be able
so.
To do this. I thought yeah. that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
but so we go into sick bay next, and Janeway comes into sick bay.
Well, before you jump to sick bay, let me just quickly yeah. say there is we do have a captain's log, a supplemental, which gives mm-hmm. us a little bit more information that it's been weeks of this hide and seek game that we've been playing with the D'Vor, and that we're about to rendezvous with the transport vessel that will mm-hmm. take these telepaths to a wormhole to escape D'Vor territory.
Mm-hmm.
And then we jump into sick bay. Go ahead.
And then we jump into sick bay, and Janeway walks by Keir. Mm-hmm. She tells Keir that they're going to meet this transport vessel that'll be able to get them out. But the vessel has changed the rendezvous points again.
Right.
And so he's disappointed. But you see a bit of this relationship, because we haven't met these refugees. Like, this is the first time we're hearing, you know, kind of understanding who they are and what they're doing. So,
right.
So Janeway
is, but you know that there is some camaraderie between Janeway and Kier because she's joking with him.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You can see that camaraderie. Mm-hmm. So it's implied that they've been, you know, trying to help them for a while now.
Right.
And then the doctor comes over and tells them that if they continue to do this transporter suspension thing, that some of them may not survive.
Right. They called it acute cellular degradation,
yes,
which is cumulative. And the more they do it, there will be a time when someone will not come back. They're mm-hmm. done. So, mm-hmm. so it's dangerous, clearly.
Yep. So next we jump to Astrometrics, I think. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And we find out that we're 2 days away from this rendezvous, the new rendezvous point.
Mm-hmm.
And Janeway basically says, let's take this really complicated route so we can avoid being detected by their, you know, arrays or whatever right. that's out there. And I love mm-hmm. at the end, she says, okay, avoid their colonies, space stations, tourist attractions, if they have any.
If they have any.
And she rolls her eyes. It was a very, very saucy little delivery of that line. It was very funny.
Just trying to imagine what a Devor tourist attraction would look like.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the command goes out. And yep. now we jump to mess hall.
Yeah.
And Neelix is telling a story to all the Brenari kids. He's kind of reading it's story time.
Well, story time, and he's telling Flotter and the Ogre of Fire, which is back to, you know, the Naomi Wildman episode.
Yeah. Once upon a time.
Once upon a time when mm-hmm. we got to meet some of those characters. So he's telling them this story, and the kids, because they're telepaths. There's no real surprises. No. And I just thought Ethan was very funny when the kid reads his mind.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, it's not nice to ruin a story by reading my mind here. Yeah. It was very, very funny.
Yep.
And I also noticed in the scene that they're all sitting on the floor in mess hall, and there's a big plate of cookies on the floor and treats or something.
I didn't notice that.
None of them were eaten.
They weren't touched.
I thought, oh, Leola root cookies, maybe? That's why they didn't eat them?
Yeah. They took one bite and wouldn't continue, probably.
Yeah. I think Ethan Phillips is always great with kids. So the scene with them reading the story and the little jokey moment with the kid reading his mind, ruining the story was funny. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I also noticed when Janeway comes in, they have this nice conversation that ends with Janeway saying, is the kitchen still open? She seems to be hungry.
Yes.
And she leans into him. Is the kitchen still open? Almost flirty. Yeah. And Neelix flirts back for you. It's always
open.
I was like, whoa, dun, dun, dun. There is romance everywhere in this episode.
I don't know if there's any fan fiction with Neelix and Janeway, though.
I don't know.
Probably there is. Okay.
But we have a little time passage, and then they're having some food when the bridge calls to Janeway, who's snacking with Neelix, and mm-hmm. they say, hey, more Devor ships are coming.
Devor vessel approaching,
mm-hmm. and so Janeway shows up at the bridge, and they realize it's just one shuttle. It's not those big ships that
it's
saw
before. It's a scout ship.
All alone, a scout ship.
And it's Kashyyyk / Kashyyyk.
It's Kashyyyk, and he says, permission to come aboard. I need, it's just me this time. And she says,
he's not in his SS uniform any longer,
he's not in the bad guy uniform. In a really non-threatening, warm, mm-hmm. cozy uniform. Mm-hmm. And she says, you know the way to my ready room. And she walks off. And did you see Chakotay's look?
No, like, I didn't watch.
Chakotay, like Beltran looked over at her walking to meet Kashyyyk in the ready room. Yeah. And he was like, what's going on?
Is that what he gave?
That what's was a going JC on look? Jealousy moment.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
But she goes to the ready room and because she has different clothes on.
Yeah.
And his hair was very fluffy, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, he went from that sort of like bad guy slick back hair to fluffy.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I'm a good guy hair.
And the lighting is back to normal.
Yeah.
Again, like the lighting to me in this episode was a little all over the place. I was like, wait a minute. Every room's different every time. But he basically says he's defecting, that he mm-hmm. wants asylum.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, why should I help you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he says, because I know everything, I can tell you everything. I can give you our database. I can tell you where our ships are.
Well, he even says, I know that there are 12 refugees that Voyager rescued 3 weeks ago. So
he knows everything.
He spills the beans about everything, which really kind of, you know, it forces Janeway's hand a little bit because now he already knows. So she kind of has to go along with this guy. She's like, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. Let's see what happens here. We're in Astrometrics and Kashyyyk shows everybody the hidden D'Vorr ships in the nebula, and that
it's not it's not the transporter ship they thought they were going to meet.
No,
it's a hidden D'Vorr ship waiting for them.
Multiple hidden D'Vorr ships, and 12 of them actually. And then he gives Tuvok. Wow, that's a recurring number. I just noticed that 12 refugees, 12 D'Vorr ships hidden in the nebula.
Yeah,
he gives Tuvok the D'Vorr patrol schedules and routes on a pad. He's like, here it is. And oh, and also here's tactical data on shield and weapon configurations for all D'Vorr warships. So Janeway's like, okay, well, thank you. I need to speak with the Bernari and I need to find out how they feel about this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And in the meantime, Kashyyyk, I hope you are okay with this, but you need to remain under constant guard. And he's like, I understand. I understand more than most what's going on.
We go to the mess hall and Janeway's talking to Kier.
With Tuvok and Chakotay.
And Tuvok and Chakotay. And Kier's like, this is highly unusual. I think we need to find this guy, Turat.
Right.
He says he's a scientist. He knows about these wormholes.
He did say there have been sympathizers in the past amongst the D'Vorr. So that that we do feel like, oh, okay.
It's possible.
Maybe he did. He is trying to help us.
And they're,
maybe.
They're talking to Kier, by the way, in a room. Now, do you remember the mess hall was on one side of that set? And then there's a hall in the middle. And then there was the other side, which got reconfigured all the time for like Janeway's quarters or Tuvok's quarters.
Is that the room that we're in now? Is that
that's the room we're in?
Oh,
yeah, we're
mess
in this
hall.
Sort of, it's like a multi-purpose room, I guess I would call
it. Okay.
You know what that set I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I was looking at this going like, this looks like the mess hall, but not the mess hall.
Yeah,
so
basically there's a set opposite the mess hall.
Right.
That is just sort of a generic big open room.
That gets redressed for all kinds of things.
Yeah, for quarters. Yeah. I think we had weddings in there. Mm-hmm, like we've done all kinds of stuff like that. Receptions for aliens and things.
Yep.
So, but when I first looked at them, I'm like, where are they?
Yeah.
That's where they were.
That's
they
where
were
it was.
Camped out in that set.
That makes sense.
It didn't have a name, that set, though, did it? It was just like a big open space.
Correct.
The ship space. I don't know what we call it.
Extra room. The extra room. The guest room. The guest hall.
Yeah, it's the guest room, exactly.
Yeah. So we have to find this Turat fellow who knows the most about the wormhole. He's from another alien species in a close by part of the galaxy, I guess. Yep. It's not too far away. So we start searching for him. But now we jump to the briefing room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Kashyyyk and Janeway. And Janeway kind of wants to get to the bottom of this. Like, what is the reason for your sudden change of heart? I mean, you've been this hardcore inspector. And now you're turning to the other side? Why? Why? And he's like, look, it's not sudden. This has been years that I've been thinking and wanting to do this and taking and making this move. And Voyager has been the perfect opportunity. And he
says, I looked at your logs. I know your ethics, your code of ethics and your humanitarian history. I've seen, you know, your journey through the Delta Quadrant and how you have had empathy and humanity with other people.
Right.
So, So I trust you. I trust that you're a good person.
Yeah.
And she says, okay, well, you're going to have to stay under these armed guards. And he's like, I'm fine. I'm used to being around guards.
I feel more comfortable.
Yeah. Yes.
He likes it.
But this was the scene where, you know, when she first came in, I thought it was just the two of them. And then halfway through, she walked around the table and all of a sudden there were guards there. That's this right. is one of those where I was like, whoa, wait
a minute. Hey, hello.
What's happening?
Okay.
Anyway, we go to the bridge now.
Yeah.
And they have found Tarot.
We found Tarot. Good old Tarot.
They pull him up on the view screen. Now, hold on.
This is what happens. He's not responding.
He's not responding.
And then he locks us out. Harry Kim overrides his lockout. Mm-hmm. And now we have a very interesting camera angle because it's from behind him.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we never talked to aliens on the view screen.
No, he's like turned around. Like the camera's what? Back behind him. And he's going, get out of here. Leave me alone. Yeah.
I almost feel like, you know how people can hack? Evidently, they can hack your laptop and they can watch you on your own camera. So it's almost like he's got some monitor, a screen that's behind him. That Harry hacked into, and now we're looking at him from behind.
Yeah, I wonder if that was in the script or if that was a directorial thing.
I mean, how could Uncle Les have said, you know what? I'm going to change everything. Yeah, we're not going to look at the alien head on the view screen. We're going to look at him from behind. I don't think he would have been able to pull that off.
It must have been in the script.
Had to have been.
It was very different for sure.
Very much so.
And he was very funny, by the way.
Oh,
he was
goodness.
Very, very funny.
Great, great character. And the actor who portrayed Tarot really did some very interesting things, or he took some interesting choices as an actor.
Very funny.
And my first thought was, before I knew who it was, I thought, wait, is this Curtis Armstrong? The actor Curtis Armstrong? Because it sounded like him.
Yeah.
Voice quality wise. But it's not. It's not, clearly.
It was very funny. And I love how he uses that makeup when he sniffs the air.
Oh,
you know, when he gets he did this a few times.
This thing was,
and it's something that Ethan Phillips used to do with the Neelix makeup all the time, but off camera, like he would, because he could blow it and it would just go in and out and in and out. It was very funny.
I bet you that actor figured that out after he was had the whole
got in the makeup
and he realized, oh my god, I could push this out further. Yeah. And he probably just tried it. And I guarantee you, Uncle Les was like, I love it. Let's keep it.
Yeah.
And that was part of it.
And that makeup, as we've said, we've mentioned it a little bit, it looked like Tom Paris's salamander alien.
His cousin.
His cousin. It did, except it just had a bigger head on the back. But the eye sockets and everything, the
face,
it looked very much like the threshold look for Tom Paris.
Mm-hmm. A little amphibian looking. Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. That was my note. Well, you know, Kashyyyk is not having it. He's like, why are we playing this game? Just disable his craft. And finally, Janeway says to Harry, is he in transporter range? Harry goes, of course he is. And boom, he's beamed aboard the bridge. And again, he's not happy. Not happy to be there whatsoever.
He sniffs his nose.
The sniff happens.
And he's mad. When he's wound up, he starts sniffing.
He starts sniffing. The next scene is in the captain's ready room. And
in the ready room. She's very coy with him. She's trying to be, instead of like tough cop,
She's playing good cop in this one.
Good cop and trying to almost seduce him with this offer of fuel for his shuttle. This
Mercurium isochromate.
Isochromate, exactly.
Yeah. She gives him a sample, but she says, I have synthesized enough to power your vessel for a year. So it's very enticing to offer him this.
Sure.
But unfortunately, he's like, you know, no good, because I've never even heard of this wormhole that you're talking about. No idea. And after good cop, bad cop goes on for a while, Janeway is the one that brings up interspatial flexure. And that's when Tarot's like, what? Oh, of course I know what that is.
Why did you say interspatial flexure?
You use the layman's term, which I don't use. So it's like, okay. And then, of course, he goes on to say, he calls it even more specific. The phenomenon of the wormhole is really specifically in his dialogue or his vocabulary. He calls it an intermittent cyclical vortex, which is very interesting.
Which also works.
Yeah.
Wormhole's but he says more fun.
Wormhole's quicker. Much more fun than the other descriptions. But the issue is this thing is constantly moving. It's not in a fixed location. Mm-hmm. And so therein lies the problem. How do we find this thing? So Tarot says, look, the best I can do for you is I can give you the last four locations. And maybe somehow, if you study it, if you guys are good scientists like you say you are, then you can determine the next location. Where will the next location?
Extrapolate out and figure out the next location. Correct. See the pattern, find the pattern, extrapolate it out.
Correct.
I just loved watching Janeway being super coy, even when she
It was great.
She was like looking with her coy eyes. It was having a lot of fun.
It was so good.
Then we go to the mess hall and it's late at night. Janeway and Kashuk are working hard on trying to extrapolate out this pattern. And
how do you find the location? A random occurrence is the question. Mm-hmm.
I did notice that she's got her part of her uniform off, the top jacket, I guess.
Yeah.
Which they're really jumpsuits in real life, but they were playing this moment as if she could take off the jacket and have pants and the t-shirt or, you know, the long sleeve shirt underneath.
Which is not the case. That's not how it worked,
but it looked good to see her in something different. Mm-hmm. And he's also got his coat off and he's in a short sleeve shirt. So they're very casual.
Very cash.
Starting to connect.
And they bring up the title again. The title is used once more in this scene. He talks about, or she talks about, counterpoint. It's in all great music, parallel melodies playing against one another. Each parameter could have a counterpoint in subspace. And that's when Janeway runs a subspatial transkinetic analysis on the wormhole data, which is very, very exciting to both of them. They've kind of like...
When she used that word counterpoint, though, because they're trying to figure it out, how do we do this? And she leans down looking at his computer, and then she turns her head to him.
Very close to him.
Very close.
Yes.
And he's staring at her for a minute, and he goes,
Captain.
Captain?
Yeah.
Like, Captain? Mm-hmm. And she still doesn't talk.
No.
And I wondered, I was like, well, what if... At first I thought, oh, this is a seductive kind of thing. But I wonder in that moment, knowing how this story ends, if she was calculating, all right, I think I know the solution. Mm-hmm. Do I say it?
Right.
Or do I not say it?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it could have been that moment
of like, do I trust him? Do I not? If I say it, then he's going to know the path to go down and I'm going to have a backup plan. So
she was thinking five or six moves ahead on the chess game. And she's just thinking, okay, if I release this information, what will happen? You know? So But it did look like she's about to kiss. They're about to kiss.
But it seemed so out of nowhere to me that I was like, what's going on? Anyway. So they have the computer. They set up these parameters and this counterpoint idea with the computer to analyze based on those parameters. And now the computer's running analysis. And they go to drinking coffee.
And looking out the window.
Yes, they look out the window at something called a Kolian Kolyar.
Kolian Kolyar,
Kolyar is what he says.
Aurora Borealis in our...
In our language, the captain says we have something like that, the Aurora Borealis. And he talks about how he loved them as a boy.
Yeah.
And that this may be the last time that he sees them. He's really playing it up here.
He sure is.
I honestly bought it. I bought it. I was like, oh, he's turned. He's a good guy. I was with Janeway. I was like, I was buying it.
I was too. I was like, wait a minute. This guy really, and then he brings up, which I love, I thought of you immediately when he says,
"Oh, good! I know what you're going to say."
He says, "Captain, I came across something else in the database, the Prime Directive." And then I thought, all I could hear was you saying over and over again in all these prior episodes, "Once again, Janeway does what she wants and ignores the Prime Directive."
What I thought was, he says that I found that you violated the Prime Directive, and then she says that she prefers to go with her instincts and sort it out later with the Board of Inquiry. Basically, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission, right? And then I thought, how come I was in the brig for 30 days recently just for disobeying a simple order? And she's still the captain and broke the Prime Directive over and over. And even this guy, even this alien is like, even broke the Prime. And she's like, I'm just going to sort it out with the Board of Inquiry later.
That's why I was laughing so hard. I said, an alien from another species calls her out on her own set of guidelines as a Starfleet op captain,
which is the
number one rule, the prime directive. And you're right. You spent 30 days in the brig for breaking the prime directive. Janeway breaks the prime directive and it's like, it's okay. I'll deal with it later.
I wrote down in my notes, citizen's arrest. I should make us to, if I was in the brig for 30 days, I should make a citizen's arrest. Janeway should be in the brig.
Very funny that I thought of you immediately, and you knew that I thought of you. So yes. There you go.
He talks about a family of refugees and a little girl that he was hiding in this scene. And he says, you know, this little girl affected me. I couldn't stop thinking about her.
Three months ago. Right?
Yeah.
He pulled her out of this thing. And then when she pulled her out, she said, thank you to him. He had to send her to the camps.
Yeah.
Where she was going, you know, not good things were going to happen.
Yes.
And that's what turned him, evidently. Mm-hmm. That's what made him, it was haunting him to the point where he just couldn't take it any longer. Mm-hmm. He felt like it's time for him to get out. And when he said, he tells this story, which again lays it on thick. It makes the viewer think, oh, wow,
he is reformed.
He is a good guy. He's not trying to do all the bad things he did before. He's reformed. And that's when we hear a beep or two and we realize that the analysis has worked. The wormhole is going to appear in 3 days from now in the Tahara system, less than 8 light years away, very close. The only issue is from where Voyager is to the Tahara system, there is an automated divorce sensor that is there that they have to somehow get across or by without being, you know, detected, because this will detect all the divorce ships to their location. Mm-hmm. And then he has this very flirty line. He sits there and he looks back at the Kolian Koliar and he says, they just never looked quite so beautiful before. Could be the company I'm keeping. And then Janeway looks over and says, or the polarization axis of the windows. And he's like, that must be it. And it's just so flirty. And the whole time
I'm thinking. She's also lounging back with her hands over her head.
I was very uncomfortable for Chakotay. I was like, you know what? This is not right. Chakotay should run into the room and say something.
I'm a JC shipper now.
Yes. Well, we both are. So
this just really upset me.
It really was.
But I'm glad that she's happy that she has, you know.
Yeah.
I love that we're back in the hallway. She's back in uniform. And I love that she's just walking down the hall, just captivated by him as they're talking about, you know, what needs to be done. And she's just all smiles and they get to the
door. They said that their plan, they talk about their plan, is that if we turn down if we basically turn off impulse, we just kind of like power down, we can drift past the sensors undetected and then power up when we're out of range. So they get to the door and what happens, Robbie?
Well, there's a good night at the door moment. And he's like, well, maybe I can come in and replicate something. And
he invites her in for a nightcap.
Invites her in.
And I was so angry again. I was like, no, you don't invite Captain Janeway in.
She was tempted, but she's like, no.
She goes, no, your replicator doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly.
And so she declines.
I didn't trust you. and then he goes inside and she turns to the guard and they have kind of a knowing moment. And then she's like, as you were.
Yeah, that again, that's different from every other episode. To have this actual interaction with the background actor where he's kind of looking at her like, Captain? And she's like, as you were. Like, don't comment and don't judge on the flirtatiousness of
me and the
inspector. Right. But again, we don't see that, you know, this type of scene
where
Janeway interacts very, very, very different. And now we have a scene in bridge, on the bridge and engineering.
This is where we're in gray mode.
Yeah, we're trying to shut down everything, right?
So this is another lighting look, like so many different lighting looks.
Very much so.
They make it past the first array.
Right.
But the pulse has damaged the warp injectors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to make it past the second
pulse. So they have to shut down the warp core, which B'Elanna works furiously to get this done, which I guess she does at the last second, but it's not soon enough because we end up getting detected. So now we've set off the Vore alarms and we are in trouble. We need to start making the move now. The briefing room is the next scene. And there's a bit of a strategy meeting. We find out that this wormhole will open in 6 hours and it will stay open for 2 minutes. That's the extent of it. And they talk a little bit about what we're going to do. And next scene, we have another corridor scene where it's the captain and Kashyyyk. And he says, we have to talk. And Janeway's like, okay, what's this about? Mm-hmm. We end up in Kashyyyk's quarters. And mm-hmm. he just tells her, hey, I've got to rejoin the warships. This is the only way that Voyager has a chance. You might be able to take on one.
I can save you.
I can save you.
Exactly. I can sacrifice myself. I'm not going to go with you.
Yeah.
And, I'm not going to get to the wormhole, but I'll help you guys get there.
Yeah.
And he's willing to save them.
Yeah.
And she reveals in the scene that she was going to ask him to stay on board.
Oh,
that yeah. she was.
I just shocked.
Like, I know she was going to keep him, invite him on board. And she's really falling him.
Oh, yeah.
Falling for him. But she's very sad. But she does agree that, he can go back to the ship. And this mm-hmm. is probably the smart move. Mm-hmm. We go to the hallway. Tuvok's there. Thanks him for all he has done for them. And he says to Kashyyyk, live long and prosper. And he does the old Vulcan hand sign, which I just love when we work those moments in. Like, old school.
Yeah. I agree.
OG Star Trek.
OG yeah. Vulcan hand salute.
Vulcan
we love
hand
it.
Salute. I was like, yeah. We go to the shuttle bay and they walk in and he starts the engine. He's got like a remote start, basically.
Hey,
like,
voice activated.
Voice
too.
Activated.
I love
just starts
it.
The engine. You see it warming up.
Yeah. And then
initiate launch sequence or whatever he says. And you see that.
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, Janeway says, I'm going to wait for you.
Yeah, she's like, we'll rendezvous after this inspection. We'll wait for you at the
other
worm
side.
Hall.
Yeah. So just and we're going to wait until it collapses. So try to after the inspection's done and we leave, please try to make it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like, what are you doing, Janeway?
And then finally, he leans in and he kisses her.
Oh, nice I was passionate. Shocked. I
leans
was shocked.
In and she takes that kiss and then. They separate for a beat, and then she goes in and kisses
she
him.
She goes for
even
a second.
Harder.
You know what that reminded me of? It reminded me of Chakotay having that little tiny kiss with the 8472 alien that was in the human body, and then he pulls away, but then he goes in for the second.
Yeah.
And so Janeway kind of...
It's the old double kiss move.
It's the double kiss move. And she's like, I'm going to really get this good kiss. And so she does. And you were shocked, though. Right?
Oh,
you didn't expect it to be happening there.
No.
And no clue they were going to smooch. And I was completely shocked.
But he takes off in his remote start shuttle. And he takes off and we think that's probably going to be a goodbye. We go to the bridge. The divorce ship appears. Janeway.
Why didn't you install that on the Delta Flyer, Tom?
Yeah, the remote voice activation. I know. I should have done that.
Okay, go ahead. On the bridge, what?
We're on the bridge. And now... As we expected, the D'Vor ships approach, they appear, and Janeway actually this time is like, she seems a little excited to see him again.
She's a little giddy. She's a bit giddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chakotay says, D'Vor people have appeared on decks 18, 15, 14, when he's going through, and then she goes, and one. And smiles and gets up and... Again, I saw Chakotay like, look, he was.
I didn't look at his face.
He did not like these moments of her going in there. But we go in the ready room. Kashyyyk's there again.
Oh, God.
Good to see you. Likewise, good to see you. And he's playing this music again.
He says
Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. Here.
That's right. He sends Prax away. He's like, go handle some inspection.
Go check on the inspections.
Inspection
exactly.
Business. Yeah.
And they have a moment alone.
Right. Where they're like, do you think they'll know? And like, nope. But, they might be suspicious, this and that, this little hush-hush sort of like secret that we have together. Mm-hmm.
And
in this conversation.
Did you find the wormhole? Yes. Did you find it? Did you find it, he says? She goes, yes, I found it. It's 20,000 kilometers off the port bow.
Yeah.
And she says, a photon torpedo properly calibrated will force open the threshold just long enough for us to go through. And he congratulates her, and then you realize
this has been a ruse.
It's been a trick
this whole time.
He calls Prax in, back in,
and he orders him to go to the cargo bay to rematerialize the telepaths that are sitting there in suspension. And Janeway is legitimately shocked. I think she's always had the preparations. She's always had the backup plan. And because she kind of wanted to believe that this guy really did change. Yeah. I really felt that that was her.
You know,
that's how she was playing it. And she felt like her, you know, her heart dropped into the pit of her stomach, basically. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of when you know. It's like, oh no.
Well, she's really disappointed.
Very much so.
He tells Prax to go rematerialize the people in the cargo mm-hmm. bay. They go into the bridge, and now the bridge is emptied out of Starfleet. It's just Janeway. Just
D'Vor.
D'Vor there. Mm-hmm. And Kashyyyk sits down in the captain's chair and starts barking out these orders. And then we do see in the cargo bay that instead of the refugees rematerializing, a bunch of containers appear and they open up the container and there's just a bunch of vegetables inside there.
Right. But before that happens, we realize that these are not neutrino emissions. He fires the photon torpedo. It doesn't do anything. He's like, what is it? Uh-oh. Antimatter residue signatures. And he says, you created false readings. And Janeway looks at him and icily says, that is the theme for the evening, isn't it? And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, look at this writing. It's great.
So, and then she changes the music.
Yes.
Also, she changes the music to Mahler's First Symphony.
Maybe this will help you relax. That line, I loved it. It's just, she just handed it right back to him.
Yep.
She dished it right back at him.
And then we cut inside the shuttles.
Yes.
And now the refugees we find are in shuttles.
Right.
And they've headed to the real wormhole. They fire the torpedo. It does open the wormhole.
Bigger and, for them to fly through.
Yep. And the refugees can escape. So I just thought,
look how generous Voyager is. We just give away shuttles to
give
people.
Away
like,
shuttles.
Here, have a shuttle. You have a shuttle. We're like Oprah. You have a shuttle. You have a shuttle. And then they just give them away. And then, of course, they escape. But then, you know, Kashyyyk is kind of pissed. He's like, why don't we know? You know, why don't we have any, why are the sensors not reading these shuttles? And then he realizes we've used the information that he gave us to put refractive shielding on the shuttles. And so once they detect the shuttles, they're like, okay, go after them, but it's too late. They've already made it through the wormhole. Yeah. Yep. And then Prax comes in saying, okay, good. We're arresting Janeway, the crew. We're going to put them in the detention center. We'll confiscate the ship. And then Kashyyyk yells at Prax. He's like, are you kidding me?
We can't do that.
We can't do that.
We failed.
This is an embarrassment. This will not be on our record, Prax. Get out of my face, Prax. And it's just like, you know, it's the end of Prax's argument, basically.
Prax, they're going to deny this ever happened. They're going to. Because they're embarrassed. And,
And Janeway comes clean. She says, hey, I really was inviting
you
along with me. And he says, and he's honest with her too. He goes, I want to be straight up with you. That was a very tempting offer. Mm-hmm. And he says, the last thing he says to her is, you have the bridge. He relinquishes the bridge to Janeway, who wins this game of chess, and he leaves. And that's the last
thing. And that last shot kind of pulling out in that dark bridge again, another lighting look, but different kind of look. But she's all alone
and look at her face, man. There was so much going on Kate's face. It was insane. It was like, wow, she's dealing with disappointment, with the fact that he basically, you know, he duped her, right? Mm-hmm. And he romanced her, he duped her, he pulled her in emotion wise. So she's all this stuff is going on in her face, which is, and also the satisfaction that she finally had the last say too. You can also see on her face, like, I beat you. I beat you on this game, but I still love you. I still have puppy love for you. And then the very final shot is an exterior shot of the D'Vor ships peeling off from mm-hmm. Voyager. And we end the episode. So what is
my theme?
My
theme. I feel like the theme of this episode is it's important to trust people, but always have a backup plan. That's my theme.
Okay.
That, you know, you should trust people. You can build relationships. You can get to know people. And that's true, but have a backup plan just in case the people that, you know, when you're taking a risky move with someone that you don't know well, have a backup plan.
Okay.
Yeah. What about
you? I'm gonna say, for me, it's more about keep your fear in check. Mm. Because any genocide or any type of, you know, persecution of any ethnic group is always based in fear about something about that group that is usually unfounded and not, you know, it's not a fair assessment of a certain group of people or a type of person.
Nice.
That's my lesson.
I like that.
Okay.
I like that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. What was your rating of this episode?
I'm going to give this episode a 7.3.
Whoa.
Yeah.
7.3. I say whoa because I'm going to give it a 7.5. So we're pretty close.
By a little bit. 0.2.
We're pretty close.
Okay.
I think Kate did a phenomenal job. I loved what she did in the episode. Mark Herlick, I thought, was a great... The whole guest cast, they were all great. I found the story, and it comes back to sometimes context. I felt a little disoriented, not in a good way. Not like in little ways that I just kept feeling like, oh, I don't quite feel like I'm able to engage in this episode completely because I'm a little disoriented, if that makes sense.
Did your rating also have anything to do with the screen time of the other series regulars? Were you feeling that it was too short?
I didn't even think about that, but when you bring it up, you know, I like seeing scenes with Neelix reading stories to kids and more scenes with the Doctor or Seven or you or myself or B'Elanna. We didn't have, nobody really had much to do.
No, except Janeway. Janeway episode for sure.
All right, okay. 7.3 for you, 7.5 for me, and
drum roll.
Our Admiral and Captain rating for Counterpoint, 8.7.
What?
8.7.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
They liked this episode.
They did. Well, I gotta say, Kate did a phenomenal job. If you're a Janeway fan, which who isn't, like, this is a good episode for her. It's a really good episode for her. So.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right, 8.7.
All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us this week. Join us next week when Robbie and I will be rewatching, recapping, reviewing, and discussing the episode Latent Image.
See you, everybody.